Hello, everyone. Welcome to Locked On Suns, part of Locked On Podcast Network. Today, as always, your host, Evan Sutter, and joined by co-host Brendan Clean. You can follow me on Twitter at eSutter. You can follow Brendan on Twitter at BrendanClean14. Also, make sure to go follow our Locked On Suns Twitter page if you're not already at Locked On PHX Suns. Your support of ours very much appreciated. I know going into the new year, I say that almost every podcast started off with that Locked On PHX Suns, but we have some really exciting stuff coming on our Twitter page and throughout the next year at Locked On. So go over there if you're not already. Make sure to go follow at Locked On PHX Suns. But today, we're back with you guys for a regular Monday through Friday episode. We didn't join you guys after Saturday's game, where the Suns had a really valiant comeback effort against the Denver Nuggets, but fell in the end. And we wanted to talk mainly about, from the Nuggets game, DeAndre and his dominant performance in the second quarter. 24 points in the second quarter, 33 points in the entire game, alongside 14 rebounds, 10 on the offensive glass. He also had four steals and a block in that game, Brennan. So the star of the game was obviously DeAndre Ayton. They were down by 25 points, I believe, at one point. They came back and almost won that game. I think they were down by three with a minute to go. Let's just talk about DeAndre first. What was your impressions of we finally saw the moment where DeAndre Ayton took over a quarter and how dominant he could truly be?
Yeah, that's what I tweeted when it was going on, is just like, don't let it get swept under the rug how impressive it is really for any guy. I mean, 25-point quarters is a pretty like historically good indicator of, there's not a lot of guys who have done that. Obviously there's random nights here and there, like Corey Brewer scored 51 points or something a while ago, Terrence Ross, but for the most part, like guys who can do that and really take over, it tends to be a pretty good list of offensive talents. And obviously we've seen not just that night that Ayton clearly has that potential, but to see him do it all in one fell swoop like that against a matchup in Nikola Jokic that he struggled with the first time around. That whole quarter wasn't Jokic. Mason Plumlee was playing quite a bit for them too. But we've been talking for so long about Ayton understanding when he has an advantage over his matchup, and that really most nights you could make the case he does. And so to see him really do that and to do it in the flow of the game too, because we know, we've talked about it as well, like he's not Karl Anthony Towns. He's not Anthony Davis. You can't throw him the ball on the block and expect consistent, efficient offense. He can get you a bucket here and there, and he has a mid-range jumper, which a few of his points came from. For the majority, it was just catching the ball over the top of the defense and making a simple play. And a lot of the time, the dunk was right there for him, because Jokic is pretty slow-footed and wasn't moving as well as he needed to corral Ayton. And so kind of all came together for him that second quarter, and showed, I think, what a future when he's scoring 20-25 a game would look like.
That's just so impressive too, because he was 12 for 13 that quarter, and all of his, really all of them were off putbacks or off the offensive glass and near the rim. I saw a tweet from Mike Schmitz, who was retweeted by Kevin O'Connor or The Ringer, and it said, DeAndre Ayton is shooting 68% at the rim, not factoring out garbage time like CTG does, clean the glass, but the only guy who he's trailing that has at least 200 shots to the rim, excuse me, is Giannis Antetokounmpo, and he's already beating guys out like Joel Embiid and Anthony Davis, who are 71% and 69% shooting at the rim, respectively, per clean the glass. So, I guess, what does it say about this guy? Is 20 years old, just turned 20 years old, less than 6 months ago, and he's already one of the best finishers at the rim in the entire NBA.
Well, I think it means that the excitement you had when you saw him play in college, anyone who watched him, it's coming true. And in a hurry. I mean, this rookie class has been incredible to watch in general, but the fact that the number one pick is translating so many of his different skills into the NBA right away, I think is awesome. I mean, and to be fair, like I was worried early in the season. There was a lot of times when not even early in the season, maybe 2 weeks ago, before he kind of has been putting it together recently, where he would rely a little too much on the mid-range. He wouldn't be as aggressive. And Igor Kokoschkov said after the game, you know, those plays where he's catching the ball on the short roll or even in a more traditional pick and roll around the rim, he was passing out of those a lot. But you see what happens when he switches into gear and realizes, wow, okay, I have one of the slower centers in the league on me, and I'm catching the ball in space almost every time I get it. I can just go and really dunk it almost every time. And the Nuggets made some adjustments in the second half, I think, but to see him not only have those skills and see them translate right away, but also understand what he can do at this level so quickly. This is only, you know, his 37th game. He's not even halfway through his rookie year, and he's already kind of understanding his advantages. I think that's really exciting because I think he will eventually get to the point where he can post up more and he can diversify his offensive game. We haven't even seen him shoot any threes yet. And so that he can already do this with so little at his disposal is pretty incredible.
I feel like we should touch really quickly on Igor Kokoschkov and his player development really quickly, because I got a few tweets. You saw them too after the game where we were waiting for Igor to come talk to us, like, oh, that loss is Igor's fault. The rotation sucked, blah, 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 blah. But we have to give credit where credit is due with the guy, Igor Kokoschkov, because we're seeing it now with Josh Jackson playing a lot more smart the past few weeks. We're seeing a Devin Booker loving the system. But DeAndre Ayton, especially since his benching, has taken a complete 180 as far as defense goes. There's still many inconsistencies. Don't get me wrong there. But the amount of inconsistencies that we see or the amount of mental lapses we've seen has really shrunk down to a minimum. And Ayton's really, really quickly in this month, ever since that happened to him, buying into the system. Really, it seems like he's enjoying himself being in Igor's system as well.
Yeah, I would point anybody who's frustrated with inconsistencies or just kind of the progress of the team the past three or four seasons, I think we've seen more individual growth from this team, from the players on this team, than we saw from almost anyone on the roster. I mean, ever since McDonough took over, I think the player development this year, and you know, I'm not trying to throw McDonough under the bus. He hired this entire coaching staff and put these players in place, but this group is making bigger strides than I think at any point in the past few years. I mean, you think about the fact that the Suns just declined Dragan Bender's option and effectively did the same with Marquese Chriss by trading him in ahead of their third season in the league. And we've already seen Ayton, Bridges, Melton take these huge, huge leaps from the beginning of the year. I think, you know, that's what people need to have the perspective on is, of course, there's things you can nitpick. And I think Igor's harder on himself than just about anyone would be. He points to himself almost every time a loss like this happens. And I think that's fair. But at the same time, like, these guys have gotten so much better. I mean, the fact that we're even able to talk about positives right now is a testament to their growth, because we saw a lot of ugly losses early in the year where it was really worrisome. And these guys have turned it around in a hurry.
Now, one more thing I wanted to hit on with DeAndre, if you wanted to add anything else, Bert, go right ahead. But as far as the last eight games goes, since Devin Booker's return, I wrote this on Brett's side of the Sun yesterday. He's averaging 21 points, 14 rebounds, 1.5 steals, and 1 block per game with a near 70% true shooting percentage over the past 2 weeks at 69.7. And what's the long-term outlook? If he's playing like this, let's just say not even long-term, the next 6 or so months between now and the end of the season in mid-April, if DeAndre keeps playing like this, what does this do for not only himself, but the Suns as a destination, you think?
I would hope that it makes people, you know, look at the team as one with potentially two stars. And, you know, Devin Booker is already turning heads around the league, I think more even from the player's perspective than some of the media. But I think if Ayton puts this together, you see how quickly these guys get on the map, so to speak. Like, Kristaps Porzingis might be the core piece to woo Kevin Durant over to New York, it seems like. And, you know, Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons are both in their first contracts, and they're still good enough and exciting enough that Jimmy Butler was interested in heading to Philadelphia. So it turns around in a hurry, and I think Ayton putting together a really, really strong rookie season would do a lot. The only thing I would add, just from a statistical standpoint too, I wanted to mention before we go to our next segment, is he's set or tied his career high three times in the past five games. So I think that is another indicator of how quickly he's rounded into form and started to really, you know, show what he can do in this league. 16 of 20 against the Nuggets. That's pretty incredible. And if you think about, he only scored 9 points the rest of the game, think about what he could do if he was locked in and involved for four quarters. We could see huge, huge nights from him this year.
Yeah, I think I know Trevor Ariza was talking about before he got traded about that 2020 game. I think we're maybe should push that to about a 30-20 or 40-20 game. He's looking like an absolute monster out there. Before we go on to our second semi here, talk about the point guards going up against the Suns recently, I want to tell you guys about our Locked On NBA Twitter account at Locked On NBA Net. If you're already following them, go right ahead and do so. Go on your Twitter account, type in at Locked On NBA Net, because like I told you guys on almost every podcast, it's a valuable resource. Brennan and I both follow it. if you want to get information outside of Phoenix, outside of me and Brendan, there's so many great follows on there that are all synced to that one Twitter account, like David Locke in Utah, Adam Mares in Denver. We have Golden State reporters as well. We have Los Angeles Lakers reporters. All 30 NBA teams are covered really greatly. Our credentials are really going up all around the NBA. So it's really fun to watch our site grow and our network grow overall. So if you're not already doing so, go on your Twitter app and type in at LockedOnNBAnet and give them a follow.
And one more thing before we go on, I want to tell you guys about Homey. It's really a revolutionary, exciting new way to buy and sell your house. They're coming into Phoenix with a great idea, a great plan, coming from Salt Lake City, where they've had tons of success, and they want to make the home buying and selling process easier for you guys. So what Homey does is not only do they have an interface on their website and their app that is easy to use and easy to understand, saves you time and energy, but they also save you money. And that's the main priority here. They can sell any priced home for the same low cost of just $199 to list and $1,299 at close. So they save you on average over $10,000 every time you're going to buy or sell your house with them. And that's one of the cool things too, is that they're doing it on both ends. So when you buy a home on Homey, you can qualify for up to a $5,000 buyer refund to help with the hassle of the closing costs and fees that come along on the back end. So these guys aren't like some of these other companies that try to make money off of helping you. That's not what they're here to do. They really just value providing you a team of lawyers and real estate agents and cutting the costs for you to make it as simple as possible. What we're going to do, partnering with Homey and giving you an extra little boost here, is $100 off that listing fee. So it'll be just $99 to list your house and sell it with Homey. We're going to do it with a phone number this time, not an offer code, but a phone number, and that is 602-892-3335. Again, that's 602-892-3335. Call in, get $100 off your listing fee, and check out everything Homey has to offer. All right, we wanted to talk a little bit about what has been going on, really the main reason the Suns have lost the past two games at home, despite playing pretty well, is just massive, massive performances from the point guards on opposing teams. And that was Russell Westbrook on Friday night scoring 40 points to go with 8 assists and 12 rebounds. And then Jamal Murray on Saturday, 46 points, 9 of 11 on threes, and 8 assists of his own. Really, both guys in the fourth quarter took their teams home when the Suns were not really able to defend them. Where do you think the problems are coming from? And do you think this is something that could continue? Or do you just feel like you played Westbrook and Murray, who are two of the most exciting scorers at that position in the league, and it'll kind of change once you get some easier matchups?
Before I dive into my point there, I just want to say, since we're recording before the game, they're playing Stephen Curry tonight. So yeah. This might continue for another 40-point game, in my opinion. But it really is just players, in my opinion, Brent, just elite players like Russell Westbrook, who's an MVP. Jamal Murray has, I think, scoring title upside really soon in the league. I mean, you see it multiple times already this year. He went for 50 against Boston, 50 against someone else, I forget, but 46 against Phoenix. And once he gets hot and once he has space, I mean, if you look at what's around him in Denver, you have Jokic, you have Gary Harris when he's healthy, Michael Porter Jr. eventually when he's healthy. He's going to have all this space for multiple years to come. So I think he's just a flamethrower from the outside, and you really can't do anything when he's hot like that. And I've left three, but Russell Westbrook as well. It's kind of showing that this team is really young, Brendan, but they have to grow into their roles. And I think just elite all-stars like Westbrook, Jamal Murray eventually, and now Stephen Curry, who they're going to play tonight, they're just going to have a tough time against those guys because they're so much more savvier and they know their way around the court more than the guys like D'Anthony Melton and Mikal Bridges and Josh Jackson.
Yeah, and they have Kemba Walker and then De'Aaron Fox next week. So, I mean, part of it, I think, is exactly what you're saying. Just that's a really deep position in the league right now, and there's different types of – we talk about it at center with DeAndre Ayton, but – just the different kinds of matchups you face, especially in the Western Conference against point guards every night, it's just tough for a young team to deal with. But I think when it comes to Murray, he was pulling up in transition from three, and you know, he actually had some ill-advised shot attempts in that fourth. I don't think it was the perfect means. The first quarter was pretty, I think he 3 of 3 and got off to a hot start, and then with a nice finish too. too for him. I think, I mean, if the Suns had forced him into attempts, made him work for his points a little more, found him in transition, double teamed him when he got around the basket, some of that does fall on DeAndre Ayton. I think a lot of those layups Murray was getting, I mean, he has a nice handle to get to the rim, but he wasn't facing much defense when he got there. So I think it's kind of a combination. And if you're cool with it, actually, I want to try something new because I asked Anthony Melton about this after the game. So I'm going to insert, I'll let you guys listen to what Melton had to say. He had a lot of perspective on just the fact that defense is more of a team type of thing. And obviously you can point to Melton himself for letting this happen, but I think he was right in saying that checking those guys, Josh Jackson mentioned it as well, just checking the guys who get hot early in the game and not allowing that to mount into something where now they're near 50 points and you have no chance of winning. But here's what Melton had to say.
I mean, I think defense is like a, you know, team thing.
Yeah.
So we have five positions, so the good teams, you know, everybody contributes. So, you know, sometimes guys have, you know, hot shooting nights like this. It's the NBA, you know. Players are, you know, the best of the world. So, tip my hat off to him. But we collectively, you know, we gotta help each other out and, you know, and figure out what it is. So we don't have those splurges for, you know, the other players.
It seemed like in transition, especially, he was kind of creating space, finding openings.
Yeah, definitely. That just comes with communication. We just gotta talk to one another, figure it out early, because I think, well, he started the game off with like three threes or something like that.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
him and Malik Beasley gotta go on early, so we gotta know to find those guys, you know, see if other people hit shots first, because we were just giving them open looks.
Is some of that still, I mean, obviously the starting lineup's been the same, you guys are building that chemistry, but is some of it just getting familiar and comfortable, or?
I think that's just with everybody. Whoever's in the game, because it wasn't just, you know, the starters.
Yeah.
It was whoever's on the floor. He's getting open looks. So we just communicate to one another, and we should be good.
Yeah, so I think it's a couple of things, but I mean, how have you felt about Melton's defense over the past few games, just in general, as he kind of acclimates to the NBA?
All right, I've seen this multiple times. You probably follow the same people I do on Suns Twitter, Brennan, and like people like Max McCauley of 7 Seconds or Less podcast. He tweeted this out. I think it was a really good point during the game yesterday, and it was, or on Saturday, excuse me. And it was just about D'Anthony Melton being a better help defender than on ball defender right now because of his length and his instincts. Same goes with Mikal Bridges too. And like going back to my original point about that, I think it's just an experience thing. I think once D'Anthony Melton plays at least like 40, 50, 60 NBA games, 100 NBA games, he'll look a lot different than he does now. Because I just think he's relying more on his college instincts. Like if you guys listen to the podcast, you already knew like we were really high on his instincts at USC, but we're seeing him a little bit now. But on the NBA level, you have to adapt.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's a good point. The off ball versus, you know, team defense versus individual defense. I think a lot of the Suns players, even the ones that have shown some progress on defense this year, are victims of that for sure. Melton, the Suns are 2 points better when Melton is on the floor defensively per 100 possessions. So that's pretty good for a rookie. And I think that goes to show, I mean, not even just his minutes, but just the games he played since he wasn't even in the rotation at the beginning of the year. They've made a pretty significant leap on defense since he just entered the rotation and entered the starting lineup, especially. But I think, you know, really right now, Josh Jackson and Rashawn Holmes are probably the only two on-ball defenders on this team that are above average.
Yeah. And I might go Mikal there just because of his length, and maybe Kelly Oubre if you get
Oubre a couple. Is a good one. Yeah, but Bridges, Oubre. I mean, we saw Bridges get exposed against Russ and Murray, I feel like, this week. I mean, those are, like we just said, elite guys, but I think he hit the quick, smaller players, as we talked about. He's more, I think, eventually of a 3-4 with kind of the athletic limitations he has. But, yeah, he has the length. Yeah, it's just maybe it's recency bias getting smoked by some of these guys recently with Mikal.
No, that is a good point, though. I forgot we brought that up on our Thunder recap about him being a 3-4. And Patrick Patterson did really well against a guy like Russell Westbrook. And I agree with that. I think he's more of a stretch 4 long term, but we'll have to see on that. But as far as defense goes and really containing these guys, the one thing that really worries me, I'll end this on this one point if you want to add anything else afterwards, and it's especially tonight against Golden State, Brennan, where Stephen Curry is going to know that this team is terrible at guarding inside the paint. And DeAndre really likes to help out on defense. So he leaves his guy. And I think we're going to see this a lot tonight, where Stephen Curry is going to drive into the lane and he's going to kick out to either Klay Thompson or Kevin Durant in the corner. And it's going to be on guys like Mikal Bridges and Josh Jackson, Devin Booker, and the rest of those guys to not go and help out DeAndre, even though they probably will want to help him out. It's really pick your poison, because either Steph Curry's going to make the layup or he's going to keep passing it to the corners and hang wide open threes.
Yeah, you have to be disciplined against the Warriors, and I think they're going to need to be really focused and patient with their off-ball switching as well. That's one of the only ways you can control what the Warriors do off the ball. But, I mean, it's going to be a challenge, and I think that's probably best for this team right now, is to keep getting challenged and keep getting better. But before we move on to our final segment, a little bit of a sneak preview at the Warriors game through a fun lens here, looking at Kevin Durant's free agency and kind of what could happen there, and thinking about that as we enter tonight's game. Wanted to tell you guys about the Locked On NBA show. Speaking of the Warriors, I mean, that's a dominant topic of conversation just about every day on the Locked On NBA show. They're one of the best teams, but they've also had a lot of problems this year. So if you want to hear about Golden State and kind of maybe what's happening with Kevin Durant, or they're getting a little bit healthier, been playing a little better, just beat Portland on the road in a close game, go check out the Locked On NBA show. But also, you know, tons of different storylines. We every Monday have the biggest stories from local experts. So hosts like Evan and myself go on and give some insight to what's going on with some of the teams that don't get talked about as much. So it's really the best way to stay on top of the league in the small 30-minute shows that you've gotten used to over here at Locked On Suns. So if you haven't already, go subscribe to Locked On NBA and check out everything those great hosts are doing as well. All right, so I'll give you the floor here, because you have a piece coming out later today, I believe, on this situation brewing with Kevin Durant, could enter free agency this summer and change teams potentially as the rumors have kind of built up around him. But what's kind of on your mind as far as KD goes?
No, I know people are going to scoff at this idea, and honestly, I'm scoffing at the idea as well, because I think it's less than a 5% chance of happening. But I know for a fact, from talking to a league source who is familiar with the Suns' plans from last summer, the Suns are preserving their mass cap space. I guess I'm breaking this on Locked On Suns, but they're preserving their mass cap space for a guy like Kevin Durant. If you put in their cap holds for guys like their draft pick, if it's in the top five, it ironically goes to $38.6 million, which is right outside of $38.2 million threshold for a guy like Kevin Durant. And it makes a lot of sense to think about, Brandon, because they have a guy like James Jones, who if Durant asks around about the league about with a guy like LeBron James, like, how is James Jones a person, blah, blah, blah. It makes a lot of sense. No one's going to give James Jones a bad rap league-wide, and he's the former NBA PA treasurer. And you also have this young talent like Devin Booker, who, as you guys know, probably as Suns fans, Durant said multiple times in the past 2 years that Booker is the next guy up. I love Booker. I wanted Booker in OKC originally. I think there's something. I know it's less than a 5% chance of happening, guys, but I think there's just a chance that maybe Durant gives them a meeting. There's no way I don't think he comes to the Suns, but I think there's a chance he gets a meeting, helps the Suns' image a little bit, and you go from there. Because I think just off pure talent-wise, not looking at markets, because I think markets nowadays play a huge factor in that, and that's why I think he's ultimately not going to choose Phoenix. But if you look at the talent between the Suns with Aiden and Booker and the rest of the guys, whoever they get in the 2019 draft as well, if they keep it, compare it to New York, who has Kristaps Porzingis, who needs a lot of lottery luck if they want to get another top guy in there. The Clippers, who relies on Kawhi Leonard going there alongside Kevin Durant. And then Kevin Durant's already mentioned he doesn't want to go to the Lakers, supposedly, because the LeBron James image and the media hype around him. So if you want to just play narratives here, Kevin Durant is a supervillain right now. I mean, people don't like him because he went to a 73-win team, Warriors. But if you go to a team like the Suns or the Knicks, for example, and you revive a franchise like that and have a young guy and lead him and pass the baton eventually to either Porzingis or a Booker, it makes a lot of sense for a guy like Kevin Durant to rebuild his image that way.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's worth considering from a lot of different angles. I mean, first, just the fact that, you know, this is still ultimately what the franchise wants to get involved with. You know, they've done a good patient job for the most part of trying to build through the draft. We've seen that for quite a few years now. But, you know, the Blake Griffin and Paul Millsap meetings that got canceled 2 summers ago maybe, you know, didn't necessarily signal that from now on, the Suns aren't going to get involved in stuff like this. It certainly still seems to be what their end game is to bring a guy like that into Phoenix and revive the kind of glossy past of this franchise from Steve Nash to Charles Barkley and on before that. So I think it's interesting to think about, and I agree with you completely that, you know, markets and some of the off-court stuff plays a much bigger role in this stuff maybe than ever before. And certainly with the very, very biggest stars, it definitely does. And I think that's why the Knicks have stood out compared with so many other options for Durant this summer. But, you know, the other angle is exactly that relationship between Devin Booker and Kevin Durant. Is that enough to decide it when Booker, you know, hasn't accomplished the kinds of things that so many of these other guys that Durant has played with have? Probably not, but it is the kind of thing that ends up mattering to the players a lot more than we take into consideration, I think. So I agree with you. It's probably a real, real long shot that he would make that switch. We've never heard him connected to the Suns in any way outside of his relationship with Booker through Team USA. But I agree that maybe the best thing that could eventually happen here would just be that he does give a meeting and at least, you know, consider it in some way. And that blowback positively from that kind of helps the Suns retain their image of a team that can get interest from top-notch players.
If I'm not mistaken, I might be wrong on the year, but when LeBron was flirting around teams in free agency, I think it was the Clippers he might have taken a meeting with at the time, or some, I think it was the Clippers and some other team, I'm forgetting. I think it was the Bulls, who also had a young guy, Derrick Rose.
Yeah, he definitely strongly considered the Bulls.
That makes you think, though. I mean, those meetings didn't really help those franchises, but it put them on the map as far as like, hey, if I'm even considering going here, that helps out long-term for a franchise like Phoenix, doesn't it? Because even if, let's say, like 2014, LeBron gave them a meeting, but it helped out not much at all, but at least gave them a positive feedback. And I really don't know where I'm trying to spin this, but I guess, like, what's the factor of possibly getting a meeting with a guy, Kevin Durant, even though you know you're not going to get him?
Yeah, I mean, I think the way that I kind of look at it is, you know, we saw this with the coaching search this summer where they were interviewing a lot of guys to, you know, across the entire NBA, this happens where, you know, we heard like Kevin McHale, Dan Marley, these names where it's like really unlikely. It felt like that they were actually going to be hired by the Suns to be the next coach. But you get input from those guys about, okay, well, what if you're not interested, or, you know, you don't necessarily feel like this is a hot job, like what are we doing wrong? What can we be doing better that would eventually woo you? Or what have you seen work in the past? It's almost like picking people's brain when you have the opportunity with interviews to do that. And I think it would almost be that type of situation. I could see value there of getting a superstar in the door and saying, okay, I mean, I kind of think this might have been along the lines of what happened with Rich Paul and the 76ers, where LeBron's agent met with Philadelphia, even though it was pretty much all set that he would be with the Lakers, just to kind of talk through things. And I think, you know, we don't know what happens in those meetings, but the idea that you could talk to a KD and say, okay, what do we need to do? How far away are we from getting a player of your caliber? And why aren't you picking the Suns? Or, you know, why do we not necessarily stand out as much as we could? I think there's value in that. And obviously just making the fans happy and some of that smaller stuff. But what would you put the percentage if you had to, just to 6 months out, 7 months out, just wild speculation, but let's try to end with how likely this is.
Yeah, this might sound a little harsh, even though I just reported, but I think it's like 2%. I think it's really low, but I think maybe if you're doing a percentage as far as a meeting goes, I'd put it like 30-35%, just because I know he won't consider them in the end, in my opinion, unless Booker and Aiden become just Shaq and Kobe 2.0 in the last 3 months of the season. But I think there's a higher chance of a meeting than him ever picking the Suns. I think him getting a meeting helps the team overall. And what do you think, Brent?
Yeah, I think it's probably around there. I would maybe even put it like less than 1% chance that he would sign here, just because with these big level guys, we hear about the teams that they're thinking about or the ones that have some sort of possibility to land them far before free agency even hits. And right now it kind of seems like it's just New York, Golden State, or potentially the Clippers. And, you know, we are 6 months out and we haven't even heard the Suns as something he would be interested in. And I think that's just the reality, is the Suns are a ways away, but I think long-term it definitely could be something that helps them get one of these guys. And maybe it's more of a realistic conversation in the next few years with the next star to come available. But as far as a meeting, I agree. I mean, I would, you know, teams or players take a lot of these meetings for different reasons. So I could definitely see him coming and talking. And I think that's probably positive.
We might as well end it on this since we're talking. We went so deep on him. What's your prediction 6 months out on where Kevin Durant lands? Do you think he stays in Golden State if he wins a title? Or do you think he, if he wins a title anyways, goes off to, let's say, New York and starts anew with a guy like Rich Kleiman, who seems to have a pretty big say in what he does?
Yeah, I think right now my guess would be the Knicks. Just Marcus Thompson wrote and talked on the radio a few months back about that would be his guess, and he's about as plugged in as anyone with the Warriors. And there's just been so many rumblings that that kind of thing might happen, and it makes a lot of sense with between Kleiman's connections and just KD's East Coast connections. He grew up obviously in the DC area, and going back and playing in Madison Square Garden, being the one to rejuvenate that franchise, I think that's kind of the perfect way to put his career among the very, very best players ever. And it would be really exciting to watch. I mean, I think I get it from that standpoint too. If he wants to do things that have never been done before, that's certainly a big mountain to climb. But I think if anyone could do it, he's right up there. And it would be a fun storyline to follow and fun to see how he would fit with some of those guys and what that team would look like.
Yeah, if you're trying to rework your narrative from Durant's point of view, as far as going from what he is now to what he hopes he can be as far as his public perception, it makes a lot of sense to go to New York and try to revive that franchise. But this is a fun little last segment to finish off today's show. I know you guys might have had a little fun listening to that about the Durant speculation. And if you're listening on Bright Side of the Sun, comment down below what you guys think the percentage actually is, because you probably all agree with us that it's probably less than 1% or 2%. But just curious to hear you guys' thoughts. But We'll get to you guys on Tuesday to recap the Warriors game, because it's New Year's Eve. Brandon will not be at the game. I'll be at the game. But schedules and New Year's Eve, it seems like it doesn't mix well. So we're going to be back with you guys tomorrow to